This is Suno India production. You can now listen to all our episodes on our Android and iPhone app. Download it now.
The Bharatiya Janata Party government has been discussing and advocating for One Nation, One Election for years. The High-Level Committee on One Nation, One Election submitted a report to President Draupadi Murmu on 14th March 2024. The report has 21 volumes and is more than 180,000 pages long. It has suggestions from the representatives of various political parties, economists, officials from Election Commission, businessmen and other experts. The report unanimously supports one election for centre, state and local bodies such as panchayats and municipalities. It seeks a notification from the President that the terms of the government in state and local bodies will be limited to the date that is fixed for elections, giving election bodies some time before all elections can be held simultaneously. The committee recommended that in the first step, simultaneous elections to Lok Sabha and legislative assemblies for state be held, and later in the second step, elections to local bodies be held but within 100 days of holding the Lok Sabha and state elections. Home Minister Amit Shah, in a recent interview during the India Today conclave, listed the reasons why they support One Nation, One Election.
एक साथ चुनाव होने से खर्चे का व्यय कम होगा, पॉलिसी मेकिंग में सरलता हो जाएगी और जनता भी कंफ्यूजन के बगैर जिसको चाहेगी उसको 5 साल के लिए काम सौंप कर देश के विकास के काम में लग जाएगी, अपने परिवार को समृद्ध बनाने के काम में लग जाएगी। तो वन नेशन वन इलेक्शन एक सॉल्यूशन है।
Economists N.K. Singh and Prachi Mishra presented a paper to the committee that simultaneous elections can help improve economic growth, improve crime rates, and improve educational indicators. The logic they give is that schools are the site for elections causing disruption. We are replaying an old episode where Suno India's Rakesh Kamal interviewed Chakshu Roy, who heads the outreach team and leads the legislative and citizen engagement initiatives at PRS Legislative Research.
One Nation, One Election is something that has been brought up by Prime Minister Modi multiple times, and he has also mentioned it during the Constitutional Day recently. To understand the complexities, the challenges with simultaneous elections, and how did we come to choose the current electoral system we have, I talk with Chakshu Roy, who heads the outreach team and leads the legislator and citizens engagement initiatives at PRS Legislative Research. Hi, I'm Rakesh Kamal, co-founder and producer at Suno India, and your host for this episode. To start with, I asked Chakshu, what does the Constitution say how the election should be held?
The Constitution does not specify when elections will take place. What the Constitution does specify is the term of the legislature. So the Constitution specifies that Lok Sabha will have a term of 5 years and the state legislative assemblies will have a term of 5 years. Now, the Constitution also has a caveat. The caveat is that the maximum term of the Lok Sabha or a legislative assembly will be 5 years. But during its term, if, let us say, the government loses the majority, then there might be a possibility that the term of the legislature might be cut short. When we started as a republic, the Lok Sabha started and all the state elections started at the same time. And till about 1967, every legislature in the country completed their 5-year terms as clockwork. Because no assemblies and the parliament's tenure was not cut short, everything ran at 5-year intervals. So the elections were simultaneous, so to say. 1967 onwards, what started happening was in states, for example, there were people, elected MLAs, started defecting, moving from their party to another party. The states, the tenure of the legislative assemblies in the states had started getting reduced. Then after 67, there was a Lok Sabha which did not have a full 5-year term. When that pattern started breaking, so now what happens is that in a year, you'll always see anywhere between 3 to 5 state elections happen. And then during the time of general elections, you will also see that some states, you know, will go, for example, Andhra Pradesh and Telangana went to elections at the same time as the general election. Odisha went to elections at the same time as the general election. So that also happens.
And Modi spoke about, having all elections from national, state to panchayat elections, like having 4 boxes. How does that work? I mean, isn't it confusing? And what do you think will happen? Like regional parties, will they support it? I don't know. It's a lot of confusion. What do you think is going to happen if we go in that way?
So, Rakesh, I think there are 2 or 3 issues that we need to think about when we want to, you know, talk about simultaneous elections. What does it mean for a voter? So now this is a question of voter understanding, voter maturity. And the reason this question comes up is there have been some studies which have pointed out that when a state election and a general election happened at the same time, voters preferred to vote for the same party in the state election also and in the general election also. Now, what this means is that possibly the voters did not consider different, they did not consider state issues and national issues separately, but they considered, one omnibus issue and voted according to that. Now, that is an assumption. There have also been cases where a state has gone to election along with the general election and the electorate has returned a different verdict. They have chosen somebody different at the state level and they have chosen somebody different at the national level. So one, there is going to be an impact on voter behavior, which will then reflect outcome into the electoral discourse of the country. Some experts argue that it might result in national parties gaining an upper hand and regional parties, you know, standing to lose out a little bit. Now, so that's one part of it. Now, the logistical part of it is this. State elections are, you know, primarily paid for by the state government. Central, the Lok Sabha elections are primarily paid for by the central government. The municipal elections or the panchayat elections are held by the state election commission. So there is a multiplicity of authorities and there's this logistical challenge of making that many machines available, allowing for campaigns to happen in a structured manner. What it also means is not the entire country doesn't vote on the same day. What it would mean is that in a state, if there are phase-wise elections, you will, you know, go to vote for your MP, your MLA, and, you know, your third tier representative. It could be, you know, in your case, it could be somebody from your municipality. So there's a logistical challenge involved about how do you manage all of this seamlessly in one voter list, especially when there is this thing about, what happens to the wishes of the voter and also what happens to that interplay between regional issues and national issues.
What happens if, say, a state assembly dissolves midway? Does that mean that there needs to be constitutional amendments to make sure that we decide on what happens then? Or is there something already in play? Like, will a president rule come in, or the central government takes over? I mean, do we have to make all these constitutional amendments if we go ahead with this?
For simultaneous elections to be held in this country, not only do you require constitutional amendments, you also require, you know, a starting point for the simultaneous election. Now, one of the first constitutional changes that you'll have to make is to figure out a mechanism, as you pointed out, that what happens if a government in a state or if a government at the center loses a majority. Now, there are two things that could, you know, that could take place. One, that when the government loses the majority, somebody else forms a government. So, the Law Commission and other, you know, institutions have recommended that when you move a no confidence motion in the House, you also have to move a confidence motion in the House so that one government is replaced by another government and the term of the legislature continues to be for its full term. But there could also be a circumstance wherein that nobody else in a fractured assembly or in a fractured parliament, nobody else is in a position to form a government. Now, in this case, experts have suggested that the president can then, take over the government and be assisted by the prime minister as a prime minister and his council of ministers as a caretaker government. And similarly, at the states, it could be the governor along with the chief minister and his ministers. Now, what should this duration be? So if a five-year term is there, 3.5 years is completed or 4 years completed, you can still possibly think of, you know, doing it for another year because, you know, it takes 6 months to do the election. So effectively, but what if a government falls within the first year of, its formation, or within the, 1.5 years of its formation? Now, the majority of the term is left. Nobody else is there to form the government. Now, should the president or the governor take over? Because that's not, you know, what we, that's not our constitutional scheme of things. Our constitutional scheme of things is a prime minister-led form of government. We are not a presidential system. So that is one set of, you know, problems that we have. The other set of problems that will arise is that we will always have to figure out a way of resetting the counter so that everything coincides. So if there is if Lok Sabha does not complete its five-year term, then we have to reset the counter back. So simultaneous elections require, you know, careful resettings over and over again. Now, what does a reset would mean? A reset would mean that some state assemblies' terms might be extended beyond 5 years, which will require a constitutional amendment. Some state assemblies' terms will have to be curtailed so that they can fit into that simultaneous calendar, which means that the will of the people who elected a government for 5 years gets curtailed. Their government only gets 2.5 years or 3 years, but not the full 5 years. So that also presents a little bit of a problem. So there would be a whole range of constitutional amendments which will have to be done to make this possible, which then means that political parties will have to come together and agree on how to do that. Because constitutional amendments do not require a simple majority in the House. They require a two-third majorities in Parliament, in both Lok Sabha and Rajya Sabha. In case Lok Sabha and Rajya Sabha can't agree, you cannot break the tie by, you know, convening a joint session of Parliament. Constitutional amendments, the tie for a constitutional amendment can't be broken by convening a joint session. You have to, you know, convince both houses to think and act on the same lines.
You know, it's interesting. For a constitutional amendment to make, like you said, both the houses have to decide, right? But there are likes of a lot of people, like I say, you know, in a panchayat or a municipal corporation, whose opinions are not even considered, right, technically speaking, about the change in their electoral system, or the mayors of that city, or none of this. They don't have any role to play in deciding how the elections will impact them.
Rakesh, you know, when I was reading about the question of simultaneous elections, I came across a number of discussion papers. A lot of those discussion papers also talked about the fact that the government has convened all-party meetings, or tried to convene all-party meetings, where different parties have come and given their viewpoints. Some parties also chose not to join the all-party meeting because they were not supportive of the idea of simultaneous elections. Now, to do simultaneous elections or to debate simultaneous elections, this is something that will require a lot of consensus building, a lot of conversations, not only between political parties. It will require conversations between citizen groups, panchayat members or municipal members. And it will have to be a much broader based conversation than just between experts and political parties and members of parliaments and MLAs. Because this is a system that will impact all of us. So that consultation process will have to extend. Not only should that consultation process happen at the state level, but it should also happen at the district level or the village level, because the outcome of this will be far-reaching. And when for a far-reaching step, which requires multiple constitutional amendments, a complete overhaul in the way we vote, I think that merits, you know, deeper and broader conversations across the length and breadth of the country. Now, having said that, we should also, you know, talk a little bit about what is the rationale for simultaneous elections. Now, there are two or three rationales that have been talked about. Now, one rationale is elections cost a lot of money. So the central government and the state government spend a lot of money for elections. Now, the counter to that rationale, or you know, the opposing view to that rationale, is that a lot of money is spent, but a lot of money is also spent by political parties. So it is not only a question of saving money for the government. What about all the election expenses that are done by political parties? Election expenses, will they be optimized? You know, will they be curtailed? Because we keep hearing about money and muscle power in elections. So that's one. The second argument given in support is there is a disruption of governance. So every time elections happen, the Election Commission puts in a model code of conduct, which means governance activities stop. Now, what is this model code of conduct? The model code of conduct, broadly speaking, is that you shouldn't be doing activities in the run-up to an election to influence voters just because you're in office, right? So if I'm a chief minister and I know that, you know, elections are going to happen, I should start announcing when the electoral period starts. I should start announcing welfare schemes to people so that they vote in my political party's favor. The third part of it is, you know, deployment of paramilitary forces for the safe elections, or teachers who have to, you know, be deployed at different voting booths. Now people ask as to if you are doing election for all these things, there will be some optimization that you'll be able to achieve by way of, you know, paramilitary deployment or teachers deployment. But is that well worthwhile for the kind of things that you might lose out on. So, for example, you might lose out on voters being able to express themselves and differentiate between municipal, state, and national issues. So that's a bigger weighing thing that you have to think about.
Putting on this aside, the whole base of democracy of, you know, electing the person who represents you and who you feel will, you know, resolve your issues. I mean, if we go down to the basics of, you know, good roads, good light, good facilities, that is why we go and elect our person, right? Do you think that people's issues will still come forefront? Is there any study based on that that you can think of?
You know, if you flip to the end of the Constitution, there are lists that are provided. Now, one list says all the things that the government, the central government is supposed to make laws on or is supposed to make policies on. Then there's another list, you know, that talks about state level issues, which is education, health, law and order. And then, you know, in the 90s, when we had that constitutional amendment related to the third tier for, you know, panchayats and stuff, they deal with what is the role of the panchayats and what is the responsibility and what is that mandate. Now, when we elect, you know, our representatives at these three tiers, ideally the assumption is that that election is based on issues at those tiers. So, for example, at a panchayat tier, you know, a person is worried about, am I going to get water in my tube well for my farm? And, you know, or is the Prime Minister's Gram Sadak Yojana is going to get implemented in my area? Now, that is a very on-the-ground issue, which can only be addressed when somebody comes and says, oh, you know what, this is an issue that I am thinking about. Vote for me, I will make this happen. Now, will simultaneous elections, you know, blur this distinction between ground, state, and national? Now, that's a real challenge. Could that happen? Yes. While the Indian voter is very discerning and very wise, is there a mechanism to ensure that, you know, voters will vote for three separate or two separate representatives while being able to distinguish between state and national issues? Some voters might be able to, some voters might not be able to. Now, you know, one of the reasons, and you know, I'm taking a completely different thread. When the Constitution was being made, it was debated as to what kind of voting system should we have. And there were some people said, you know, we should have a proportional voting system, which is a lot more complex system. Somebody also said we should have a single transferable vote and, you know, we should rank candidates and then, you know, vote for them accordingly. But the Constitution makers decided to take up the simplest voting system, which is first past the post system. I vote for one candidate, you vote for another candidate, everybody's vote is put together, whoever gets the maximum number of votes is elected. Now, the reason we chose this system was because we said that, you know, this is a system which is uncomplicated and might be suitable for a country. Now, in a simultaneous election where, you know, the three candidates at the three levels or two candidates at the two levels are going to be elected, will the same logic apply? Is it going to become too complicated for our voters, or will our voters be able to, you know, differentiate? Now, that's an open question, and that's the reason we require deliberation. India is, when it comes to election, we are the largest democratic voting exercise in the world. Elections in India are, it's a festival, it's a foundation, and it's done at a completely different scale. So I think when we are thinking about this, we should definitely look at international examples and learn from the best international examples. But voting is something that that is at the foundation of a democracy, and we should be very careful about how we think about these issues. We should have the right amount of data. We should have the right amount of experience before we attempt any of this. And to do all of this is not going to be easy. It requires a fair bit of changes in our constitution, which is also a lot of work. Now, one last thing that I would, want to point out is there is something to be said about in favor of elections which are happening in a staggered manner. Now, when elections happen in a staggered manner, inadvertently, because, tenures are not completed or whatever, or for other reasons, it gives you a dipstick understanding of what a particular region of the country is feeling. A simultaneous election might not give you that same dipstick understanding at different points of time. So now, for example, we had elections in Bihar this year. So we know as to what Bihar is feeling. We had, there were local body elections in your city. So we now know as to what your city is feeling. Next year, there will be elections in Assam and West Bengal, and we'll get to know as to what those parts of the country are feeling. I think, that is something that is also key to our democracy. Getting an understanding of what the country is feeling in different parts and in different times. And how do we preserve that in our election process is also going to be key.